My name is Michelle Owu and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for One Another. The date is now the 12th of August 2009. The time is 2:17 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from?
My name is Peter Cox. I'm 54 years old and I come from Rheda in Mid Wales.
Hello.
Hi.
Did you come in from Wales last night?
No, today. Well, sorry, yesterday. So travelled down Tuesday afternoon and just been getting prepared this evening.
How long did it take you to come down?
About 5 hours.
Did you come in the car? Or?
Yeah, I drove down. So, I've travelled in from North London on the Tube and I'm really looking forward to going up on the plinth now.
Tell me about some of the preparations that you've been making before you arrived.
I signed up for the plinth 3 months ago and was one of the first people in Wales to help try and promote it because I do a lot of community arts work and arts sector work in Wales and got involved with Artichoke in helping to raise the profile of the project in Wales and then just waited my turn really and then my turn came 36 hours ago with a telephone call saying that there'd been a cancellation for 3 a.m. Today and would I be prepared to drop everything and come down and take it up. So I said absolutely yes, and here I am.
Why did you do that? What is it about this project that appeals to you?
I got it from day one, really. As soon as I heard the concept, and I've always been a fan of Gormley's work. I've enjoyed various different kind of presentations of his work in places. And I just got it and thought, well, I can imagine why some people will come and just stand and be. But because I've always been involved in performance and presentation of arts work in some way, as I'm a playwright and a screenwriter in my day job, I just thought that there would be opportunities to communicate story, to communicate ideas, to communicate creativity from the plinth well. And it's quite a challenging space, I think. So in 45 minutes' time, I'll find out whether our idea can communicate from up there or not.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your idea?
The idea is part of a three-year project that my organisation, I'm chairman of trustees of a community arts organisation in Mid Wales called CARAD, and we're partnered in with a London company called Kinetica. And it's a three-year project and we're developing a puppet which grows over 3 years. It starts off as a child, it's given gifts by children in communities that it goes to visit. It grows up in a year's time to become a kind of teenager puppet, so it becomes about 8 foot high. And in the following year, when it's been nurtured and given gifts again by the communities it visits, it becomes a puppet which is 18 foot high. And then it walks from Wales to London as part of the Cultural Olympiad, is what we're aiming for at the moment. And there'll be 12 puppets walk from the nations and regions of Britain. One will come from Scotland, one from Northern Ireland, one from the South West, one from Wales and so on. And the project is already well underway. So Shaz, who's going to join me on the plinth today, she's a child puppet, as it were. She's about 2 foot six, 3 foot high. And she was made in Brick Lane in East London. So we've already created new links between the hill farming communities and children in Mid Wales, in rural Mid Wales. And children and young people who've been working in Brick Lane, and that's one of the whole ideas behind the project. Is it's about diversity, about social change, and bringing about new networks and defeating prejudice and that kind of thing, and education. There's a whole social dimension to it, but we use puppetry and the communication through these puppets to help us achieve that. Really.
What's been the interaction between the children and the puppets? The children, for example, in Brick Lane, how have they approached it?
Well, they were involved in the making, they've been involved in the story behind the puppet and so on, and Shaz then came to Mid Wales 2 to 3 weeks ago and met about 150 children in a primary school in the middle of rural Mid Wales. The children there absolutely fell in love with her. They went completely bonkers when they met her. They thundered across the playing field to meet her. And it was a very wet day. And the school just said, we're not going to do this indoors. This is an outdoor event. And the children will put their raincoats on and they'll come out. So we couldn't sit down in the grass or anything like that. But we just we facilitated it by saying, Shaz would like you to take her on a journey of exploration around your playground, around your grounds and the school, the outside of the school. And the children just absolutely loved it. They held her hand, they helped to lift her up, and she slid down the slide that's in the playground, she climbed on the fort that's in the playground, and they completely engaged with it. And she then appeared in carnival procession the next day, and there were people yelling her name. Parents and grandparents had met by then, the children, and they'd been told the story of Shaz. People were yelling her name, whooping, hollering, shouting. And these are generally quite reserved farming community people, but carnival's obviously a day of misrule and so on. And she stole the show, absolutely stole the show.
Where did the idea for walking to the Culture Olympiad, the walking to...
That's come from the project leader and director, who's from Connecticut. She's the director of Connecticut, and it's a woman called Ali Pretty. And Ali conceived of the whole idea, and is then building partnerships, new networks with organisations all around the country. So I think she thought that something of the scale of the Olympics needed something artistic, which was hugely collaborative, and the logistics of bringing 12 puppets across the ocean from Scotland and Northern Ireland and so on as well. That will necessitate great amount of cooperation, communication, logistics between communities, and help and support. And so she conceived of these. We loathe to use the word puppets anymore. Really, we use the word champions. That they've become champions, but they're not champions of discus or 100 meters. They're champions of something social. So something that comes out of their community need. So it might be that an inner city community perceives that it has a need to reduce knife crime or violence. So working with children and young people, you assess what the need is. So what does that puppet become a champion of? It becomes a champion of the freedom to walk the streets at night, for example. Now, in rural Mid Wales, that's a very different kind of background that those children are coming from. There are issues to do with isolation, for example. There's issues to do with the environment. Major cities such as London and Birmingham get their water supply from those places. So there's been cultural kind of vandalism in the past where, for example, vast areas of Wales has been purchased by cities like London, cities like Birmingham, Liverpool. Valleys flooded, communities essentially turned into refugees 100 years ago with no recompense and that kind of thing. So it's not for me or for us to assume what the puppet can become a champion of in its community. But it's used in a kind of educational process with facilitators, storytellers, drama workers, the puppet themselves. Sometimes they're doing residencies in schools where they'll do 3 months in a school, and the school will say, can she stay with us for another 3 months? And it's provoked and provided the most extraordinary experience for the children.
Can you describe what she looks like to me?
It's a beautiful aesthetic. It's very unusual. Most people think of their first port of call for puppets, things like Pinocchio, Punch and Judy, or even the kind of animation toys and things that come out of Disney today. Now, she's actually very different. She's made of an aluminium, a very soft, pliable aluminium fretwork, so there's holes in her body, which makes her light enough to operate. But she's got a shape which is very neutral. It's almost asexual. It doesn't necessarily have to be a boy or a girl, and it's up to the community and the children to choose if they want it to be a boy or a girl. She also has a head shape which is rather refined and broad at the top, narrow at the bottom, which is reminiscent of some of the kind of alien photographs that people say, when I saw the aliens in my abduction, they were shaped like this. So that gives her an ethereal, otherworldly quality. And in many ways, that's quite helpful, because when children say, where has she come from? you enable the kind of child's imagination to work by saying, well, she's come on a very long journey, or she's come from a very long way away. Where do you think she's come from? And what do you think it's like where she's come from? And so you get the child to imagine it, and children immediately go into play mode with the puppet. Their imagination strikes a chord with them, and they're off and they're telling a story. And we had one beautiful experience. We walked Shaz down from the school to the church in the town where we live, and the children walked with her, and two of them held hands on either side all the way down. But the two children had a conversation about something which had happened during the day, which was a problem. So one child was telling the other child that something she'd done earlier in the day had hurt her. So it was like she almost like a form of bullying. But Shaz, the puppet, was, by holding these two children's hands, was allowing them to reconcile their difference with each other. And the adults who were walking with it were listening to this and thinking, this is actually really moving, and it's a real microcosm in a way of the way creative work and kind of creative inspiration that comes with something like this, the way it can kind of reap benefits just in the way people exist and the way people see themselves and how it allows them to express themselves as well.
So what are you going to be doing with her exactly on the plinth?
Well, what I'm going to do on the plinth is she's going to go on a journey of discovery. Everywhere she goes, she has to discover the world around her. And the plinth is an interesting place. There's lots of things, big things from Nelson's Column that she can look up at and explore. And there are smaller things such as the cameras, the lights, the net and so on. So she's operated on poles and a harness, and she sticks out in front of your body about 7 to 8 feet. So she can fly, she can swoop and move around in different ways. But because people are really engaged with this project, even though it's 3 o'clock in the morning, we've had young people come down from Mid Wales. We've got other young people who've been involved in the project already in East London, and they're coming tonight to create a kind of party atmosphere for her, and they're going to replicate this giving of gifts and giving things to explore. So they've brought things with them that they can hold up to Shaz for her to explore and try and understand. So it might be some plant material, it might be some flowers, or it might be a flashing light skipping rope, or things which are kind of around us in the world every day, but to this naive, innocent stranger, this alien child, they are things which she can discover fresh. So my task up there, challenging as it is with the operation of it in under difficult circumstances up there, my task is to try and create as much life in her as possible while she explores these things, and that's going to be my hardest task up there.
You said you're a playwright.
Yeah.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. How would you describe your approach to that?
Well, from the moment, I've been writing plays for nearly 30 years now. I've been produced at the Royal Court Theatre in London, at the National Theatre, and all around the country. I wrote for the Channel 4 programme Brookside, drama series. I wrote for Brookside for 18 years, so I've got a strong social conscience in my writing. I've always been renowned for that. I've researched and worked in war zones and times of great crisis in communities, such as the miners' strike or during the Troubles in Northern Ireland or in the Civil War, war-torn Sudan and that kind of place. So I've always had a writing career which has had some kind of community in crisis aspect to it, even if that's microcosm of family in crisis or individual in crisis, issues ranging from domestic violence and child abuse and right the way through to big picture war stories and so on. So I've having seen those communities in those kind of stressful situations, I've always found that in a lot of the other work that I do, in community arts work and so on, that I'm an extremely good mediator because I've really seen situations where if mediation doesn't exist and if diplomacy and bridge building doesn't exist, what it can lead to. So that's kind of part of my core ethos really about how I write. I'm very prepared to write extremely strong drama. That's becoming more difficult in British television these days. British television at the moment, with the recession and the things that are in the headlines every day, it's much harder to get strong drama made. I'm submitting things to my agent My agent's saying this won't get made at the moment because people want frivolous, people want light and frothy. And I don't believe that, but, you know, she's my agent and I have to trust that. But I think people love strong story and love strong character. And I'm sure that, you know, my time will come again, but it is challenging getting challenging drama made through television at the moment.
Where did your involvement with community arts start?
I think it's always been something I did from youth theatre kind of days. When I was a young dramatist, I became involved in the Royal Court Youth Theatre, a Young People's Theatre Scheme, as it was called. Common Stock was a London company that I got involved with, their youth theatre. And I just saw the extraordinary kind of benefit people can get in their lives from engaging in the kind of creative process, engaging in teamwork, setting extremely high standards of a goal for a group of people to achieve through a creative project. And I just kind of gravitated towards it. So I've always done it as I've done large-scale community plays that take 3 years to set up and you have a cast of 125. And I've done community film. I've just finished a community film in Bromyard with a company called the Rural Media Company, where everybody in the film is not a professional actor and everybody who films it are non-professionals except the leadership team, and their job is to skill share. So I would do workshops with community members and build up a story, build up characters, build up a whole picture for them to then make into a very, very high quality film, 30-minute length of film about their own hometown and their community.
What were the three adjectives, the three words that you used to describe yourself?
Makes things happen.
Why did you choose those?
It's kind of my motto, really. It's like make things happen is the way that I would use it. And I would often use it with young people as a kind of motivating thing and an inspirational thing. It's that it's too easy just to sit back and wait for things to happen. And I think with your career, with your creativity, with your life's goals and that kind of thing, you take a choice and you have the ability to make things happen. So I think that's what I always try to encourage people to do.
Do you consider yourself to be a producer or facilitator?
Yeah, I mean, on my CV it says playwright, screenwriter, creative producer.
What does it mean to you to be a creative producer?
It means you have to be prepared to conceive and construct big picture vision projects of some kind or another, to be really realistic about how they may be delivered, but also to be very kind of, to have a strong vision of what they may deliver that is hidden, what they may deliver that might take a very long time for other people to kind of grasp the full weight of something. And such as the projects that Artichoke would be involved in over the years, Sultan's Elephant, Spider, One Another, is, I think if you're prepared as a creative producer to think well beyond the immediate, that's half the battle. And then to be able to patchwork the creative options together so that you're continually open, but you're also trying to manage and have a kind of aiming device, which is going to carry something. That's one of the nice things about One Another is that it's a very simple framing device, but it is a limitless opportunity for creativity.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think, I suppose all I would, kind of, I'm very conscious that the use of the plinth as to create a voice for people has been commented on quite a lot. You know, with people using it as a kind of to become an advocate for their charity or their cause, which is completely understandable and laudable. But actually, my own thought about that is I could easily have done that. But what I felt I wanted to do was to use it as a creative space and to try to, in the spirit of creating a platform, as it were, upon which you can give something of a story, give something of a an intriguing look at the world from a different point of view, which I think is obviously what art will do a lot, it's interesting to me is seeing the way people are not necessarily look at the art on the plinth. They're looking for the art as, you know, as has been called a kind of Trafalgar Square version of Speaker's Corner or whatever. And I would just like to see more art in a way, more artistic expression up there, and people having a go at that. People are trying to find ways to use it. Is a very difficult and challenging space, and I may well be found out in half an hour that what we're trying to do will or won't work, and we'll soon see.
Are you looking forward to it?
I'm really excited. I could barely sleep last night, not least of all because it's such short notice. I had an extremely large amount of stuff to get through to get me here. But no, I'm very excited, and everybody who's coming, again, 3 o'clock in the morning to come from Wales, to come across London, it's not easy. It's logistically challenging for people and public transport issues, etc. And they're as excited as I am.
Thank you very much indeed.
Great.